If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Well, you'll try.
Welcome to Properly Howard, a podcast that reviews classic films and other pulp fiction. Today we take a look at Sam Raimi's Darkman. Starring esteemed actors Liam Neeson and Frances McDormand, Darkman is just a really weird way to say it.
The score performed by Danny Dirkman.
Yeah, Danny Elfman composed the score for Darkman.
This film was originally called Elfman, but when they actually got Danny Elfman to come in, he's like, it's pronounced Elfman. They had to change the name. So, Steve, film three in our newlywed season. I think three is a good number to notice themes developing. Mm-hmm. So I wrote down a few themes here. One is that all three of the films we've covered so far, there is a love interest. Mm-hmm, okay. You know, there's sort of a B-plot love story, which I think, you know, is fitting with the newlywed season. To humanize the protagonist, there is a lovely lady involved. Doppelgangers seems to be a developing theme.
Sure.
Last Starfighter had an android doppelganger. And this one is sort of the entire movie is premised on his, like, that's his superpowers, that he can become your doppelganger.
Yeah.
And of course, there is a movie later in the season where I chose the movie because I thought that one of the actors was your son's doppelganger. So,
right.
We have that to look forward to. Also games, of course, because, you know, newlywed game, but, you know, Running Man is the entire thing is premised on a game show.
Video game and Last Starfighter.
Video game will get you into outer space.
Carnival games. And
I was thinking carnival games. That's right. Yeah. Carnival games. So I kind of like carnival games. Like, I'm not a big carnival fan. I don't like the experience of being at a carnival.
What's your least favorite part?
Of being at the carnival?
Yeah. Carnies?
I don't mind carnies. I kind of like
$17 cans of Modelo.
I like the idea that there are people who still that's still their job.
They carn.
They carn. I do like the, it feels like an old-timey job. Like, these people existed when
they didn't do background checks or drug testing.
None of that. It feels like an old-timey, like a cobbler.
None of those liberal progressive movement, right? Like, just if you can flip a switch, you're hired.
There are certain jobs that continue to be jobs, even in the modern world. Carny is one of them. I like that they exist.
I'm not a fan of AI, but I would be okay if a computer ran a Ferris wheel as opposed to some of the other options I've seen.
It's just a new form of con artist. You know, the program is meant to con you. The carnies are meant to con you. And with both, you kind of play along. You're like, yeah, I'm just going to be a sucker. It might be fun to be a sucker for a few minutes here because who knows, maybe I'll beat the system. Wouldn't it be kind of cool if I could beat the system when it's rigged against me? It doesn't cost me that much. Carnies use a lot less of our water resources. I'm sort of pro carny as opposed to AI.
Okay. So in your hierarchy, AI still has not hasn't displaced carny as a preferred option.
Uh-huh. I like doing research online. Do not like the AI enhancements. Mm-hmm. I do not like being at a carnival, and yet I do enjoy the carnies.
You mentioned playing games. Do you play the games if you go to a carnival?
I might play one or two games. Yeah,
I was always not allowed to.
I can see why.
My parents would say they're rigged, and I'm like, you don't know how good I am.
In this one instance, your parents were good at parenting. You know,
well, the one, yeah. Well, here's the thing is like, they'd go to the basketball and they're rigged, they're not regular basketball hoops. And I'm like, have you seen me play at a regular basketball hoop? I might be made for this. I love it when you could win a goldfish, and like, that's the worst thing. Because, I mean, imagine, like, here's a little pro tip for if any of you kids listening, if you're going to play the goldfish winning game, in the event you win the goldfish, I would do that towards the end of the day.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to be lugging a goldfish around for the rest of the day.
Go to the carnival at night if your intention is to get a goldfish.
There's a sweet spot, right? I mean, you don't get the goldfish, mm-hmm. you know, before its expiration date, if you can. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is kind of why I liked old-timey video arcades that had other kinds of games like skee-ball. Mm-hmm. Because skee ball was, it felt like that's kind of a little bit like a carnival game. And I don't have to be outside in the heat sweating with a bunch of people bustling around with sweat and body odor. You asked me the thing I like least about the carnivals. It's that other people are there.
Ah, yes. Carnival goers.
There are carnival goers.
This is how I feel about church.
You might like a cathedral setting. It's just that there happens to be other people around.
I might actually enjoy being surrounded by the word of God if nobody else is speaking it.
That was quite a scene, that carnival scene.
Oh, man. Most bendable fingers in the carnival, right?
There was a little part of me in this film that thought, well, maybe he can make this work. You know, he's on the cutting edge of fake skin. Like, who would be better?
How serendipitous, right? That the guy who is just on the cutting edge of fake skin would need a bunch of it. Like a whole mess of it.
Yeah. So you think like, okay, he's on the cutting edge of fake skin. You know, I'm not sure how his technology works. Sometimes his technology is fantastic. Sometimes he needs to start it using a lawnmower cable. So there's a little bit of a question about how good his technology actually is. I thought maybe he would be able to get the girl at the end. You know, it's like,
oh, he could have. That's the beauty of Darkman.
I think, well, it's that carnival scene where you realize, like, he's psychologically damaged. Like, he's not coming back from this. At this moment, winning that pink elephant has driven him insane. And because of that, he's no longer fit for a normal romantic relationship.
Well, I mean, you know, maybe we're looking at this from obviously different angles. He knew she deserved a pink elephant, and he earned the pink elephant.
We all deserve a pink elephant.
Exactly. So this is the moral of Dark Man is like there are obstacles. Some of them are, you know, CEOs of real estate.
Yeah, major development companies
that have incredible balance. Like that could be your enemy. Your enemy could be it could be Larry Drake.
I would not want to go up against Larry Drake. I don't know what he's doing, but that face is very intimidating.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of these. But also your enemy, your obstacle, your
Larry Drake's superpower is beady eyes.
Yeah, you could also be facing some of the challenges in regular life, which is carnies who are trying to take your money and not give you the pink elephant.
So you think that the carny is really kind of a leitmotif for the entire movie?
Yes, and so here you have does Liam Neeson's character maybe go a little over the top? Well, that's because we play it safe. Because we are so, you know, we're trained to be passive.
I don't know if he goes over the top because I don't think those are real fingers. They're clearly made out of Nerf.
Yes, they're Nerf fingers and he knows they're bendable. And the guy was upset because his Nerf fingers were exposed for the frauds that they were. So let me tell you,
I want to hear that guy's backstory. Like, he loses his hands, he cries just like Liam Neeson does, but he happens to be on the cutting edge of Nerf technology.
Yeah. So just so long as nobody shakes his hand. And that's probably why he's upset, because he sees this guy get a super good grip on a ball, and he's like, you know what? He's doing this job, and he's like, I'm just trying to take all these regular kung fu grip fools down a notch. So this movie, it's my first time seeing it.
Me too. Yeah.
Heather tried to convince me we had already seen it. I think so that there would be no temptation for me to ask her to watch it. I did not. I watched it on my own. I'm a good husband. I got it. That's my pink elephant gift. I had never seen it, and the only thing I'd ever seen was this carnival scene. It showed up on one of my Instagram reels, and I didn't think this was real. I'm like, what is this? I'm like, there's no way this movie is a movie. I'm like, what? I'm like, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And then when I read in the thing, this is from Dark Man, I'm like, I've got to see this. And it did not disappoint. This is one of my favorite movies we've watched in all of our podcasts.
I figured it would be. I kept on.
And I figured you would figure it would be.
I'll just say this. The first 10 minutes of this movie was, I laughed a lot. I laughed a lot. I like a gang that can include someone with nunchucks and a guy in overalls.
Yeah, dude, it had everything.
Like these guys are clearly work buddies. They're not.
Yeah.
They're not hanging out after punching the clock or whatever.
One plan, and that was get that leg.
I like a guy being frisked while he eats a cannoli or a dog treat or whatever that was. I laughed a lot the first 10 minutes of the movie, and I thought Steve is probably having the time of his life watching this. I think Sam Raimi may be a cilantro thing for me.
Oh.
Easily, I can recognize the genius of this movie. And I can view this movie as sort of something like, this is absolutely in Steve's wheelhouse. I respect Steve's tastes. I bet you he's really enjoying this. I fell asleep twice.
Wow.
I think that there
How
are...
How did you fall asleep to this movie? It's like an hour and 36 minutes.
Like I
it
said...
It never stops yelling.
I will fall asleep during an action sequence in a Marvel movie.
Well, this one, don't you dare try to tell me that the helicopter scene went on too long.
I fell asleep twice during the helicopter. I tried to watch this movie.
You could have fallen asleep twice and then gone to the doctor to find out if you had insomnia issues.
I am doing a sleep study later this week.
Is that right? So
and that's part of the thing. You know, you have to fill out the questionnaire. Mm. And mild narcolepsy while watching Sam Raimi. Like I said, I think this is a particular kind of movie for a particular kind of taste. And for me, it tastes like soap at times.
Gotcha.
But so, I always enjoyed this movie when it was super over the top. Like when Liam Neeson is dancing for the cat.
Oh my gosh.
Fantastic. Do it more. I would like to see that the entire film. Every scene. Well, all right. Let me just say this. Like this, I'll do my one tweak now. Whenever the Lewis Stack Jr. character, like the developer, the sort of vaguely Italian developer was on screen, I just thought that completely boring. I was bored every single time he was on screen.
Except for when he demonstrated that his superpower is balance.
I think at that point in the film, I already hated him.
But and to find out that, like, I'm like, dude, this guy's he can't fall because okay. he was, as a young boy, sent to work on the high steel.
Yeah, see, you're still in. I at this point, 100%. I'm way out. So I felt like there was part of me during this film that kept waiting for Bruce Campbell to show up. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I did like Evil Dead, and I feel like that was sort of a Sam Raimi movie that, or Evil Dead 2, right? Mm-hmm. I felt like that was a Sam Raimi movie that I enjoyed, and I kept waiting for Bruce Campbell.
When you got him.
I waited and waited, and all the time I was thinking, why is, was a guy named Colin Freels, the big baddie in this movie? Why not use Bruce Campbell in this role? It's a really lackluster bad guy, given the fact that your superhero is basically a monster. So I felt like that was kind of a flaw. And then when we finally got Bruce Campbell at the end, I thought, that's how you use Bruce Campbell? Why didn't you give him the other part that had infinitely more lines, infinitely more scenes? Mm. So that's my tweak.
And you know that that's who we originally wanted to be.
I did not know that. And it makes sense now that you say that would be the first choice.
So he wanted him, but the studio didn't think that he was well-known enough to carry this film. Because I think they were thinking franchise. And if you think about it, if you look at the way that this movie, at the way Liam Neeson is...
And so they chose Colin Freels, who I just had to notes again because he's so forgettable.
Well, no, Bruce Campbell was supposed to play the lead role.
Oh, he was supposed to play Liam Neeson's part.
Yes. Interesting. So that's what if you look at, I mean, Liam Neeson is kind of Bruce Campbelling a lot.
I was thinking he was Michael Richardson, but he in reality, when Liam Neeson tries to Bruce Campbell, it presents as Michael Richards.
Yeah, and the yes, the other actors considered for the lead were Bill Paxton and Gary Oldman.
Oh, give me Oldman all day long.
Oh, yeah, Oldman would have been pretty incredible. I think Paxton could have been a lot of fun too.
It would have been a different tone for sure. I didn't hate Liam Neeson in this.
No,
it was kind of fun to see him absolutely go batshit crazy.
Do you think, looking back, that maybe his Oscar for Schindler's List was sort of a makeup for the snub on this one?
I just looked at this recently. He did not win for Schindler's List. He was nominated for Schindler's List. In fact, Schindler's List won a slew of Oscars, none for Best Acting. And for me, I always thought Ralph Fiennes should have won for Best Supporting.
Oh, I thought Ralph. I thought he did win.
Yeah, none of those guys won. Like, I think that is one of the best acting performances of all time. And to see him do this within 3 years of that role, it's kind of amazing. It only increases my love of Liam Neeson.
Yeah, I thought, honestly, this was something in the arsenal I didn't think he had.
Look, you may not like this because of the cilantro thing, but you can't tell me that he's not totally invested in this role. He is going for this role.
He's not mailing this in. This is, he played this as if this was important.
I really liked the scene where he's like, he figures out that, okay, the other side of the face is incomplete data. So let's see here. I could just mirror the face to the other side. And then he tells himself, yes, that's it. Clever, clever.
I love how it's like his notes. He writes like in perfect, like almost computer font, wait, unstable. I mean, you could have just torn it up. You're not getting graded on this, man. You're just trying to make skin.
Yeah. So Liam Neeson's fantastic. Frances McDormand, who has won an Oscar, won multiple Oscars, who's been nominated for 8 Oscars and has won 3.
Yes.
She's horrible in this movie. I just watched Fargo like maybe 4 nights ago, and just breathtaking, just jaw-droppingly amazing in Fargo. Love her in Fargo. And I don't think it's her. I think in this movie, it's the lines she's given. I don't blame this movie on Frances McDormand. I think maybe she's the wrong person for this part, but more than that, I just think
it might
the
just
lines
be
the she's
part.
Given are just really dull.
Yeah, she's more of a plot device, right? She's more of a because I mean, like, it doesn't make any sense that she would have a relationship with
Jack. She's every bit of a prop as Maggie in The Last Starfighter. But the trouble is you're teasing me with Frances McDormand.
Right. So this now, Frances McDormand isn't Frances McDormand yet, right? Or is she? Is she already?
She's been in Blood Simple.
That's true. Yeah.
She's established. I mean, she's been in Raising Arizona, I think. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's not like she's unknown. And she's been in some decent movies. I guess the Coen brothers are actually in this movie.
Is this true?
They make a cameo as like the two guys in a car. They're two guys in an Oldsmobile. Anyway, that was what Wikipedia said. Wow. But I don't, you know, I love the Coen brothers. I don't feel like I would recognize them on the street if I was walking past them.
Sure.
And I guess Ted Raimi was Rick in this movie. Ted Raimi's got to be related to Sam Raimi, right?
Yes, that is. It's his brother.
Okay, well, there you go. Anyway, this movie is kind of genius. There's a lot to commend this movie. I love the way it ends. I like the premise of the movie. I like the Liam Neeson performance. And there are just long stretches of this movie that I'm yawning. So I don't know
That kind of surprises me, because I feel like the movie doesn't have a lot of moments where it's not doing something. I mean, I would say the helicopter sequence to me almost feels akin to the fight sequence in They Live, in the sense that it just won't quite go away.
this entire film is the fight sequence of They Live.
So I want to go back to, I do want to get into this movie, but I do want to get a little Raimi. You say, so you have experience with Raimi, and you're saying you mostly think it's negative. Like, you didn't like the original Spider-Man or Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, so you know that I have a very tenuous history with horror, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would you think of Sam Raimi. Would you think of Sam Raimi as primarily a horror director?
So he's definitely made some iconic horror. I mean, I think if you look at the Evil Dead sort of is kind of feels like the signature move up until we get the Spider-Man trilogy.
Right. So I kind of feel with Raimi that's the first line of his obituary. You know, iconic horror director.
But Army of Darkness is, I would say, more comedy than horror.
Okay, well, I would say Evil Dead 2 is sort of
absolutely
a combination of comedy and horror. It's a specific kind of horror. I love, back in the day, I loved those Spider-Man films. But, you know, it's a Spider-Man film. I'm
sure.
I just had a ganache the other night that had chocolate and peanut butter. I was not going to get a ganache. But it's like, you tell me it's chocolate and peanut butter. I'm gonna try it. For sure, I'm gonna try it. So I think that's maybe my experience with Raimi. I feel like,
yeah. See, I enjoy. I mean, I wouldn't say these are like necessarily amazing, but like Drag Me to Hell, I thought was a lot of fun. Simple Plan, I remember liking. It's been a long time since I've seen it, but
I've not seen either of these. This is part of my problem with Raimi, is that, like, someone who's not a horror aficionado, I probably just don't have the history.
I even kind of enjoyed For the Love of the Game, you know?
He did For the Love of the Game?
Yeah.
That movie has a lot of problems.
Sure. But, I mean, I was entertained by it when I first saw it. I've only seen it once. I can't imagine watching it again. Crawl, I thought, was entertaining. I mean, like, I've seen... I wouldn't say that I've seen like the bulk by any stretch, but I definitely have enjoyed what he does. I get it. You could maybe have the same conversation with Raimi as you have maybe a John Carpenter,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that, like, you kind of know what you're going to get. I do think they both are very self-aware directors.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
Yeah. They kind of do what they want. And they,
yeah, at no point in this film did I think they kind of don't know what they're doing. Like, they don't know what kind of tone they're going for. No, Raimi is very self-aware. He has a vision for his films, and he doesn't usually lose track of the vision.
Exactly. And I think Darkman... So
for me, it's like this movie is more of a casting issue more than anything else.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I definitely think that there are some improvements that can be made, but this is a movie that, like, start to finish... Like, the tone is the tone, and if you don't like it, then you're not going to like it. But if you're in, you probably won't be lost at some point.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to talk to you about the Wenger-Barrett's technique.
Go on.
So, Dr. Westlake is discovered in the drink, pulled out, thinking that he was a corpse. They bring him to the hospital, and there's a doctor. She's half sort of trauma doctor, half experimental scientist. And she says that they're using something called the Wenger-Barrett's technique, which, as far as I can tell, is like Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah.
Because you're basically just spinning him in a circle. And then she gleefully pokes him to show that he can't feel anything. And then she says that it's going to make him have superhuman strength. All right. So,
you know, typical.
So in this world, in this world, I think almost all scientists are developing technology that might eventually lead to some kind of superhuman monster.
Right. It's like, yeah, this is like the Cold War of superhuman monsters.
So the Wenger-Barrett's technique just involves a lot of spinning.
Hey, you get it.
I got to know more about it. I don't know if any of this, I think that there were two sequels. I'd like to know if the Wenger-Barrett's technique is sort of the origin story to some other supervillain. Because clearly this is not the first time this woman has done this, because she's presenting her research to other people in the room. She seems to be better at the Wenger-Barrett's technique than he is at developing fake skin.
That little sequence, I thought, honestly, I thought it was a bit of genius. Because it's like, then this is what I'm talking about in terms of like the self-awareness, right? Look, we know what we want to do in terms of the skin and the whole Darkman thing. We know we want to do that. But we also kind of want to up the ante for him, right? Like, he needs just being able to change your face and everything.
Everything starts with the carnival scene. What is going to be able to explain that he can throw a carny through a back wall?
Exactly. And
at
so,
some point, we're going to have to give him superhuman strength.
And so they're like, well, how do you, like, I mean, probably there's a part of them like, well, maybe you can say that with, you know, something about the formula of the synthetic skin alters the, you know, you know, the overall strength. I mean, you know, it fuses to the muscles. You could do something like that, right? But which actually, you know, probably, you know, why not, right? I mean, you're already creating a synthetic skin that's unstable. So why not add a little twist to it? Like, you could do that. You for sure could do that. Mm-hmm. But they choose not to.
Like the skin is now bulletproof, or the skin is now.
I love that they opted not to, because they're like, no. We're going to go even faster than that. We're going to just give you a little bit of exposition, because it also does. You got to do something that explains, like, how could he be so severely disfigured and discarded and then still be alive? Like, you got to bring him back to life, right? And so if the skin is this thing that can help him, but he wouldn't have had the skin on him, right? So you got to do something else. There has to be another thing. And again, if you are thinking in terms of maybe a long-term, you know, franchise, having that moment, you could have somebody be like, you know, you could have Durant. Maybe he goes in there and he gets that treatment. He gets spun around in a wheel. And now, you know, and so now you've created an arch nemesis, right? So, like, you do sort of... You could consider that a little bit of world building.
So this movie fooled me. When Darkman shows up at the end in disguise, he's disguised as Robert Durant. Mm-hmm. His face is a little bit bruised up, a little bloodied lip or whatever. I thought this is the guy. I was totally fooled. This movie has told me over and over and over, this guy's a master of disguise. And I was thinking, I could see how you'd walk away from that helicopter explosion. None worse for the wear. And then, of course, you know, so when he pulls off the mask, I'm like, of course, I'm so stupid. Of course, that's him. And but here was my thinking. That same scientist must have got a hold of him and done the Rengar Barrett's technique on him.
See, I love this.
And now he's going to have to, because that's what superhero movies do. Like, now you're going to have to face someone of equal or greater strength and ability. And that, of course, that must be what just happened to Durant. And that's where I thought it was going. So clearly I was wrong. But maybe that's something they developed in a sequel. Do you have any desire to see the sequels?
I do, but it's like, because it's not Neeson or Raimi, and it's sort of like, it kind of feels like it might be like a straight to video type joint, you know. I'm curious, but I can't imagine. It's one of these things where, like, if you need Raimi to make something this schlocky, this entertaining. Mm-hmm. And I do mean this in, like, as a compliment, because it is a bit of schlock, but it's done so earnestly. My concern is that the sequel will be maybe as schlocky, if not more, but it will lack the self-awareness that it's kind of schlocky, and then try to make something that's like more sinister or just. I just could picture it feeling less fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the reason why I don't necessarily want to go into this universe.
Well, let me just say something. This is one of those times when sometimes your spouse knows you better than you do. As your newlywed, I can guarantee you that you're going to watch both of these sequels.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
You may doubt yourself now. Like, maybe I don't want to watch it. I can guarantee you that you're eventually going to want to put it on.
I would feel even less inclined to watch the third one if it wasn't called Die, Dark Man, Die.
Can we talk about Yakatito?
Please.
It's just so funny to me that scientists on the cutting edge of technology can be so stupid. I mean, these guys are so stupid. Like, why isn't working? Well, maybe we should try again. Maybe we should be objective and try again. Oh, is that what your method should be, Mr. Scientist?
This is what happens when, like, you get a team like Sam Raimi and his cohorts, and they're like, you want to, like, bring, like, I have a friend who's He's not a scientist per se, but he's been in a lab. I don't know. We'll figure it out. I know how scientists speak, probably.
I like that he tells Yagatito, he's like, okay, we're doing everything right, and we're smart guys. So why isn't this working?
A little bit of Stuart Smalley there. I also like that.
We're good enough. We're sciencey enough.
This being the era that it is, I mean, Yagatito is faced with some baddies, and so he immediately gets into like a martial arts stance.
And isn't that bad? He immediately disarms one of the guys. If it was just Yagatito in the room with one of these goons, my money's on Yagatito. Those are some pretty decent moves. But unfortunately, kind of like Francis McDormand, it was just enough to remind you that he's Asian, right?
Yes.
It was like, let's make
sure. In case
sure,
it was too ambiguous, because, you know, his mother's
let's
wife.
Make sure that we play up the stereotype, because maybe they forgot Yagatito was Japanese.
Also, like, you can stop using the leg gun.
The leg gun was hilarious. The addition of the guy hopping in place.
That's pretty great.
That's kind of brilliant. It's like, all right, the leg gun is stupid. That's enough. That's going to make me laugh. It takes a Sam Raimi to be like, yeah, but the guy who only has one leg is going to just hop. He's just going to continuously hop to remind you that he once had a wooden leg there.
Yeah. The plan is so good, by the way, that there are, I'm guessing, somewhere in the neighborhood of 37 bad guys or,
Well, let me just say this. If you have a fake leg gun at your disposal, you don't really need to plan very well.
Yeah, and you know that, but just by design, you're going to sort of, no loose pun intended, disarm these folks, because there's going to be a moment where they're like, whoa. And that whoa moment is the flinch. This is the flinch that you can capitalize on. And now the thing is that they didn't necessarily account for guys in cars in giant shipping crates. Because they are not surprised by the leg gun, so they don't have that flinch. However, they do have to start the car and floor it out of there, because you don't want the cars idling, because it'd be too noisy and it would also create a whole carbon monoxide issue.
Yeah, you know, they had some pretty good cards, you know. They had the cars in those boxes, you know, in the giant shipping containers. There were guys with, you know, guns cocked within those, but what they found out, and what the audience finds out simultaneously, is that the leg gun is the ace of spades when you're playing yes. spades. So, unfortunately for them, and unfortunately for Eddie Black finds out that when Durant walks in with a guy and a leg gun, you're going to lose all 10 fingers.
Yeah, fingers and hands are a big, big part of this movie.
My hands. They took my hands. They took my hand.
I mean, that's arguably the funniest part of the movie. I mean, at this point, you're just like, man, he is going for it.
This is when Spielberg saw this and thought, that's my Schindler.
And the whole time he's watching the dailies, he's like, it was great, Liam, but like, could you give me a little dark man? Like, could you give me just a little more, like when you have the watch and you're like thinking about whether or not like you could have done more, could you like just lose your freaking mind about it?
Spielberg is sitting down to dinner with the Coen brothers. He's like, I'm ready to make this film. I just need my Oscar. I need my Oscar Schindler. And once I have him in place, I'm going for it. I'm going to make this film. It's the film that I was born to make. And Ethan Coen says, I happen to have a VHS of Darkman. I want you to have a look at this guy. Fast forwarded directly to the I lost my hand scene. And the rest is history.
That's how it works. I mean, it was genius casting. So do you think this movie is with Bruce Campbell is same, better or worse if he's the Liam Neeson role? Or is part of the charm the fact that, again, sort of retroactively looking at Liam Neeson in this? Because maybe at the time, you're not necessarily as, like, taken with another, no pun intended, with him as an actor.
I don't know. I think that this movie kind of has, like, a cult following, right?
Sure.
Like, I feel like I would have entered this movie thinking about it differently if it was Bruce Campbell. Like, if you're just playing the expectations game, Bruce Campbell does bring a certain something to the table, right?
Yeah.
But I think part of what intrigued me about this was it's Liam Neeson and Frances McDormand.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I can't wait to see these two God-level actors in the hands of Sam Raimi. So there was a little bit of like fascination to this for me.
Well, yeah, and I'm with you, but I'm just trying to figure out Liam Neeson's not quite that yet, right? I mean, he's been in things like Next of Kin, High Spirits. He was the bad guy in The Deadpool. You know, he's got like he's a known person, but I don't. But like,
yeah,
I wonder how much of it is like he's a really big deal versus. Like, well, oh no, he's okay, solid. So
this movie's improved with Liam Neeson. I don't think I would hate this movie with Bruce Campbell. It might have set my expectations a little bit differently. Honestly, I was most disappointed with Frances McDormand.
Yeah.
Because I guess maybe I was just coming off Fargo. I already talked about my tweak. Do you have a tweak that you think that would improve this movie?
I agree. The actor playing Stack doesn't do a lot for me. I mean, I don't think I dislike him as much as you do. I just don't feel he's, a foil enough. Like, I don't know that balance is enough to make him. Like, because he just doesn't command. Like, I mean, to me, Larry Drake is way more interesting and menacing than
absolutely
than Stack. So when you get this sort of reveal that he's working for Stack, typically when you see something like that, when you see that there's what you assume is your sort of your big baddie is actually subservient to this other, like it, you know, like in Tango and Cash. I mean, Jack Palance is the main baddie, right? I mean, and you need that kind of
Palance would have been fantastic. Here's the thing about, and I think I understand what they were trying to do for this particular plot. You need someone who's believably attractive to the love interest, right?
Sure.
So you can kind of create that love triangle thing, right? So if you had a Jack Palance, he would be an additive,
right?
But would make? Can you see McDormand with Palance?
Well, maybe in this movie, why not?
I guess so. I was thinking, like,
I mean, keep in mind, she was actually kind of willing to stay with a guy with half a face.
I don't see why Bruce Campbell couldn't pull that off. He's a very handsome man.
Right, and that would be a very
who kind of has crazy eyes.
Right? Yeah, that would be a good back and forth too. Liam Neeson and them over the topping each other, I think would have been really something. Mm-hmm.
Bruce Campbell, fatal flaw, no balance. They got him on those beams.
No matter what you could do,
they got him on the beams, and he just would fall every time.
He's got vertigo.
Is there a cliche device or trope in this movie that you enjoyed?
Yeah, so there's. You actually mentioned one of my favorite It's just the presence of nunchucks, used or unused, is really important to me. But the other thing I really liked, and it kind of
notice that we don't really see him in action. It's like that one flip that you learn as a 12-year-old that's safe enough that you don't hit yourself in the face.
Yes, and I love. I mean, in it, there is a natural comedic element of when you're like it's kind of like you're watching Airplane or Naked Gun, where like you're taking all these guys' weapons, and then in the process you're pulling out nunchucks, right? Like, you know, it would all be guns. It would all be guns, but like some guys coming in with nunchucks just in case we're going to do this a little more close. And I do. And the other thing I really liked is I love when a bad guy is filing his nails while he's like giving a little bit
of... That's a good one. I was going to talk about Eddie Black as well. I feel like he should have been in more of the movie, for sure.
Yeah.
I like it when... All right, so here's what he says. He says, bum leg, no leg, knocks his wooden leg. And he says, I was engaged to a girl with a wooden leg, had to break it off.
Yeah, great.
All right, so I like it when a big boss tells a joke, all of his goons laugh, but they laugh a little bit too long. And then he very angrily silences them.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
And I was wondering, have you ever done that on stage? And I have never seen a comic do that on stage, but I think it would be very funny.
I think give the audience a dirty look because they're laughing.
To get a big laugh and then to yell out, cut the crap!
That'd be amazing. Quiet you. Another part that I really liked was there's a lot of really funny stuff, and like whether it's intentional or not, but like when like they're letting us know that like there basically was like no body found, and he's like yeah, oh, just he said it didn't take long to bury an ear or whatever it was. I'm like, you buried the ear?
I do like a cynical gravedigger. Like a guy that works at the cemetery and his job is digging graves, so he's kind of over it.
You're right.
Like, nothing really phases this guy. I don't know why this happens. Tell me what you think about this. So after undergoing the Ringer Barrett's technique, I think I might be pronouncing that. I apologize if I'm pronouncing this wrong. I didn't actually read this in a journal. I'm getting it from the film. After undergoing the Ringer Barrett's technique, he escapes and goes back to his old lab, right? And the first thing he does is he picks up a little portable TV and he like bangs on it to see if it works. Like, was that his initial plan? Like, I gotta get back because Days of Our Lives on.
I gotta watch my shows. These eyes still work.
I gotta get caught up. I gotta find out what's happening to Bo and Layla. And then maybe like TV doesn't work. So then he's thinking, fine, I'll see if I can.
I'll try to have skin.
Try to get my skin technology to perfected since I can't watch my stories.
Well, it's kind of a fascinating film because it almost is like a kind of a, you've got like some Phantom of the Opera type elements.
And absolutely.
So you have a movie where you've made a monster origin story and a superhero origin story simultaneously. And that is so ambitious, right? And so I feel like it executes kind of on both.
It's a little bit The Shadow, right? I think initially he wanted to do a remake of The Shadow, and like he couldn't quite get that off the ground. So this is what came about. But a lot of superheroes' origin stories involve like being pushed into a vat by a bad guy.
Yeah, literally, like he has just a vat of what now? Dude, you don't have a lid on that thing, man? It should have a lockable lid.
But it's usually the bad guy. The bad guy is usually like a mad scientist who experiments on himself and things go awry.
Right.
You see that in a lot of Spider-Man stuff. So they do that for this. And at the end of the day, I don't know if he's a superhero. He might be a bad guy. Like, I don't know at the end of the day.
He's trying to bring justice in the form of revenge, right?
Right. In that way, he's a little bit Batman. Mm-hmm. And that brings me to my next point. Did the Elfman score enhance this movie or did it hurt this movie?
I liked it. I mean, it's the thing is about Elfman is like it's so recognizable, and
at times I kept thinking like this is a variation on the Batman theme.
Yeah, it certainly did feel like that, and
that reminded me of one of your critiques. Sometimes it's like, well, that just reminds me of a better movie.
Right, right.
And I kind of wish I was watching that movie.
Yeah, instead.
But for you, it didn't hurt it.
Didn't bother. I mean, it was definitely noticeable. But there was a slight campy quality to the score that like kind of, it was like melodramatic and just a touch kind of poppy in a weird way that I feel really went well with sort of mm-hmm. the vibe of the movie. I'm going to ask a really dumb question. Why didn't Darkman do more things in the dark? Because the whole thing that we discover is that, well, the skin is stable in the dark
at night,
and he did all of his skin planning in the day, and he had like 99 minutes to pull it off. But if you did any of this stuff at night, I feel like you could kind of do a lot of things. Like maybe don't go to a carnival during the day. Maybe your doctor appointments are in the day, and you could.
Hey, Darkman, how about a movie? How about taking your lady, your special lady, to a movie theater?
Yeah, if you know that your skin's about to fall off, but it won't fall off at night, just switch when your fake doctor appointments are. The movie's called Darkman. And the only time he's in the dark is when his face is off. Pretty great. Pretty great.
I like it.
That's quite the twist. Quite the twist on Darkman. Is that he doesn't do anything in the dark.
I thought his...
Like if Schindler's List, like he just had charts instead. Well, I didn't see that coming.
I thought at some point the next level of his skin, you know, because he's a master of disguise, right? So I thought like, okay, this skin is eventually going to make him invisible. And so he's like literally in the dark. He could just be invisible or something like that. I kept on waiting for that to happen. But I don't hate that the movie ended the way it did. I did like that when his skin was sort of like timing out, it would actually start smoking.
Yeah. Self-destruct. I love it.
It's pretty stable. Like, you know, he does that thing where he's like making sure it's in place or whatever. But you can get kicked in the face while hanging off a helicopter. Mm-hmm. And that face is going to remain stable for the first 100 minutes.
Not bad.
Yeah. Like, to a certain extent, pretty decent skin technology.
Could you restart the clock if you ran into the dark for a little bit?
Well, yeah, why not do that?
That'd be interesting, right? He quickly has to get into a dark place, and then like you have to sort of like recharge it, you know. And it's like, okay, if I'm in there, you know, we know that every 30 seconds of dark gives me, you know, a minute of, you know, then you have some timing, issues or whatever. We're trying to recharge and get to some, I don't know. Again,
there was a part of this movie that, I mean, I thought was kind of brilliant. I did like the idea that initially, you know, because his superpower is master of disguise, that he just kind of like is a master con artist. Like he takes the form of the bald Italian guy with a tattoo on his scalp, goes in, gets the money, and basically frames that guy, right? So basically he's just pulling a sting. I thought that was really good, and I like when they came to the room to like confront him. He's earnestly saying, "Look, I just overslept, man. I never made the pickup." And then he looks down and says, "I don't even know how I got dressed."
It's amazing. It's so good.
He's sobbing because none of it makes sense.
The kill with the manhole, just popping his head up.
That was very Sam Raimi for sure.
Oh yeah, that was so just bouncing up and down. I loved that sequence.
Steve, is this movie better, worse, or on par with a Ron Howard movie?
It's this. I feel like we're kind of in. This is the same kind of thing we do with like Carpenter and stuff. It's like this is so Sam Raimi.
It's Howard adjacent.
Yeah, it has to be Howard adjacent because Howard will make Howard could make a good version of this, but it's not this. And it absolutely has to be this. So yeah, Howard adjacent.
Yeah, I think if you were going to give me the option, this is not quite answering the question, but if you were going to give me the option of whether I would rather watch a garden variety Howard movie and a garden variety Raimi movie, I would probably choose Howard. So I'm going to say this is a Howard.
But if you're going to watch Darkman by one of these two.
I don't know. I kind of like to see Howard's version of this. I could see why he's the right person to make this. And, you know, he's the writer director and this is his vision. Right.
Right.
Because I have a more affinity for Ron Howard, I'm just going to say this is a Ron Howard minus one. You're going to say Howard adjacent.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's next? What's next on our agenda here? So far I'm quite enjoying the newlywed season.
Oh, yeah, this has been great. Even though I don't, you know, we did not necessarily love The Running Man, I think it was to talk about the original one. I did run into some people that independent of this podcast said, "Oh, I just watched the remake of Running Man." They're like, "Man, Glenn Powell's a terrible choice." Sorry.
Yeah.
Felt vindicated. Watching we're all the money in the world. All the money in the world.
I like it. I'm excited about that.
I never even heard of this movie.
Yeah, neither had I. I think that we're going to have a casting conversation about that movie, too.
Okay.
I really do enjoy the movie. As you know, I do like movies based on a true story. I don't need them to be exactly, you know, historically accurate for me to enjoy them. It's just one really odd casting choice in an otherwise very entertaining movie. But I think you might like this. This is not, I don't think this is the kind of movie that you might settle down to with seven dogs in your lap at the end of the evening. But, I'm curious to see what you think about it.
Yeah. I'm game. Of course, this is what we do.
Is there a half the battle, one to grow on moment in this film?
Oh yeah. We definitely need more OSHA investigations into labs.
These scientists are up to no good.
It's just hazards, man. Hazards. Scant PPE. You've got things that if you just touch them will burn your hands
mm-hmm.
on the inside out somehow.
Yeah, make America healthy again.
That's man. Right. Yes. I like how his cat, like, they use the cat to kind of show that, like, oh, like, he's unrecognizable. I'm like, but if you have cats, that cat was going to attack him anyway.
Look, that's the only way to deal with a cat. If you have a cat like that, put a funnel on your head and dance around like a monkey.
That's it, man.
Because that's what that cat deserves.
Dr. Porkchop out. In a cocoon of
horror. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.